Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, and welcome to My Time Capsule. I'm Mike Fenton-Stevens, and My Time Capsule is the podcast where people tell me five things from their life that they wish they had preserved in a time capsule. They pick four things that they cherish and one thing that they wish they could bury and forget. Now, my guest in this episode is the fabulous Luke Kempner. Luke is the brother of one of my earlier guests, Suze Kempner, and is a huge talent in every area of performing he attempts. He's currently starring in the West End production of Les Miserables, playing Monsieur Thénardier, the master of the house, and is well known for being a comedian and impressionist at the top of his game, receiving over 10 million views of his popular videos online. Last year saw Luke voice over 30 puppets in the West End production of Spitting Image, Idiots Assemble, including King Charles, Prince Harry, Harry Styles, Ed Sheeran, Jürgen Klopp, and many more. His TV credits include Spitting Image, Steph's Packed Lunch, The Last Leg, Murder in Successville, Love Island, After Sun, The Stand-Up Sketch Show, The Tracy Ullman Show, and Celebability. And as well as this, Luke created and starred in his own review show for ITV2 entitled Luke Kempner's Impressions, and was the resident comedian on the Celebrity Big Brother's Bit on the Side on Channel 5 for 9 series. He's also a regular on BBC Radio 4's topical comedy institutions The Now Show and News Jack, and can be heard on his weekly podcast series, Shit, I Married a Twin, with his wife and her identical twin sister, known as the Mac Twins. At the end of April 2024, he will be performing last year's Edinburgh smash hit show, Gritty Police Drama, a one-man musical, He's the One Man, which lasts 60 minutes in which he does 60 impressions while solving just one murder. It's breathtaking in its virtuosity, so do get to see it if you can. It's on at the Soho Theatre, London. So let's find out what Luke would choose from his life to have preserved in a time capsule, shall we? Here is Luke Kempner. But are you enjoying it? Are you having
fun?
Oh
my God, Mike, I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah.
I'm just having the best time. It's a dream come true.
The extraordinary thing I think about that is that your life would have been fairly solitary. Apart from television stuff, your actual performing life is sort of you go on stage and you do your stuff. Mm-hmm. And suddenly there's, 30 people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's something I've missed, you know, because I did musical theatre when I was from 2009 or 2008 to sort of 2013. So, like, I was used to being in big casts of people and having lots of social time. It's such a sociable job. And that doesn't mean going out drinking all the time. It's just in work, you're really sociable. Mm. And like you say, you know, and then when you're doing stand-up, it's so solitary. And then even when the odd TV thing is regular, but most of it is just pop in for a day.
Yeah.
You never get that kind of thing where you're just seeing people all the time and it's just amazing. It is amazing.
Mm. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
I have to say.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've done a big show. You know, I've sort of flitted about for ages, and I, to an extent, assumed that was going to be the rest of my career. I thought, you know, I'll just pop up in things. And I've done some nice telly stuff and, you know,
Of course.
Made a living. But suddenly, the whole idea of the discipline of a year's work, that's going to be really weird.
It totally is. And, you know, we said that Alana and I, my wife, you know, we were saying, we were putting the Christmas decorations away, and we're like, it's always like, oh, I wonder where our lives will be when we get these back out. And I was just like, the year before, there was no inkling that I was going to go back into Les Mis at all.
No.
So it was just crazy, you know, but here we are.
How did that come about?
Well, it came about because basically the resident director is a guy called Joe Parsons. And I'd said to him at a stag do about a year and a half ago, a few sherries deep, that I was like, can I come back? Can I come back and play Tenardia? I'd love to do that. And he was like, would you? Would you actually? And I was like, yeah. And then sort of out of the blue, I got this message saying, you know, they'd love to see you. And James Powell, the director, had seen me on House of Games, Richard Osman's House of Games, talking about how I loved being in Les Mis. And because that's kind of been my thing on any telly shows that I've done, I've always sort of been like, when I was in Les Mis, it's sort of been my joke, you know, and sort of this kind of faux musical theatre. I say faux, it's all pretty real, really, you know, just like I'm a lovey. So then I got the call and James said, you know, look, come in and see, let's have a sing through the stuff and see what we think. And then kind of then did three rounds and then eventually had, the final round with Cameron McIntosh and all the rest of it.
Brilliant.
And got the part. And it's just... And then from thinking, I wonder if I'll ever go back to musical theatre, to suddenly you're booked, and then suddenly it's the end of Edinburgh and you're in it.
Yeah.
And now I'm back in a big show. It's crazy. Yeah.
Amazing. But of course, you'll find that part easy to sing, won't you?
It is quite easy.
Yeah.
It's one of the joys of, like, you know, I've had to take a couple of days off sick because of COVID and other things, but it's never really affected my voice. Like, it's not a tough sing. There's a couple of high notes that aren't that high. Mm-hmm. So that's also a joy, you know, compared to sort of Jean Valjean or, you know, even something like The King in Hamilton, which is something I'd love to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's something you would have to just look after your voice a lot.
Yeah.
Which is quite annoying because you're just constantly worried about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that The Wizard is going to be like that. It's not a difficult part to sing.
No.
It's a lovely part to sing because both songs are really sweet.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. You're going to love it.
I am. My aim will be, can I get a round of applause even though neither song actually finishes like that?
Well, yeah, but Mike, I have the same thing with Dog Eat the Dog and The Sewers. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I get about five people giving me a round of applause. But it's because at the end of my song, well, Master of the House, you do get a round of applause, to be fair. But The Sewers is your sort of solo on your own situation. Mm. And actually, it just finishes carrying on in The Sewers.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and as a needy comedian, I need that. You know, I need my applause. I have to wait until the bows, fuming.
I have looked at some clips of The Wizard, obviously.
Yes.
At the point where you're going to do the big last note, she butts in and it carries on.
Ah, and that is the thing. And with Les Mis, you know, like, that's the wonderful thing about the show. You know, and like when they used to have the Revolve, that was also part of it. It just, the story's just always moving. It never feels like end of scene, new scene starting. It's always just everything is moving, the set's moving, and it just carries on. And even with the way the set's designed, the same with Wicked actually, is that it spills out into the audience, the set. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. It doesn't feel like we're in the audience, you're in the show. It should feel like we're into this picture now, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't seen Les Mis for years and years. It was on, and I never went to see it. But I was having lunch with a friend of mine who played Thénardier.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I said, oh, I've never seen Les Mis. He said, what? I said, I sort of missed it when it came out, and I've never gone. And he went, you've got to see it. I said, I have to see it. You know, so
you have seen it now, though, right?
He took me. He took me
okay,
that afternoon.
Good.
It was a matinee and
we went.
For
that. Okay.
And I thought, well, I understand. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's one of those things. It's like I've got a few comedian friends who I suspect you'll have had on, but, you know, people like Phil Wang and Rhys James and Glenn Moore, mm-hmm. who all came along to see me in a sort of group trip in that sort of thing of like, if I don't go and see it when my mate's in it, I'm never, ever, ever going to see it. Yeah. And it is like something part of your life you must do is go and see Les Mis.
I think so.
I suspect that's why it's still running after 40 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. And I've never got bored of it. You know, I was in the show before for 12 months. I've now been back in it for 3 months. I just never get bored of it. The music is just incredible.
Yeah.
And I love it. And you're always finding new things all the time, which is mm-hmm. great.
I think that's going to happen with Wicked. I'm fairly sure of it. Every time I look through at it sometimes, I listen through and I sort of think I'll look at my bits. I'll look at the wizard bits and see what they do. And while I'm preparing for it, I'm doing that, you know, so absorb it as it were.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting. Every time I watch it, I just get swept into the story and I find myself watching whole scenes and listening to those girls sing those amazing songs with incredible voices.
I know. I love it. I love it. I've auditioned for Fiera a couple of times, but in my younger days, but maybe one day I'll come back as the wizard. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think it's such a wonderful show. I love it. It's wonderful. Wonderful. I saw it in Broadway in 2004 when it had been there for about a year.
Yeah.
So yeah, spectacular.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? That you. It never really occurred to me that actually I was heading towards the age where I would suddenly be the right person for the wizard.
Oh, don't. I feel like that at 36 and like, you know, because there's people in the cast who are sort of 21, 22. And I remember being in Les Mis when I was 21 and seeing people who were in their late 30s, like Earl Carpenter and John Owen Jones and thinking, oh, those old guys, you know, and it's like now, you know, those people would be looking at me and being like that old guy with his kid and his wife. And I'm like, I'm one of the old guys.
Yeah, rushing home because the kid's getting up in the morning.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a very different world.
I know.
It's lovely, I have to say, to have two people on from the same family. I've had your sister on as a guest, and now I've got you.
Yes. Oh, that's, you've got to complete the set.
Yeah, right, I will.
Yeah. yeah, that's great. I mean, it's so funny like how often people in the comedy industry go, I've only just realised you and Suze are related.
Really?
And it's
such
so weird.
A common surname, isn't it?
I know, exactly, yeah. And then it's like, when you look at us together, like we do look really similar, obviously, like, you know, Suze has got a longer beard than me. But I always found it so weird that people haven't connected us, especially like, we've both been around, Suze has been around the comedy industry for like 15 years, me 10 years. I just find it weird that people haven't put that two together, but...
Well, I did a long time ago.
Yeah.
How lovely. So we've been trying to do this for a while.
I know.
And now we've finally found the time, which is lovely. Well, it's down to you, really, giving me the time. So thank you very much.
No, thank you for being patient.
So we're going to talk about five things from your life that you'd like to put into a time capsule.
I am. The one thing, though, Mike, I am struggling with is what I've got four that I want, that I cherish.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know one that I just want to stick away forever.
You're a lucky man.
I know. I feel like maybe I just chuckled at those things.
Right.
But maybe we'll get to that and work one out.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Some people say, oh, I've got loads of those. And you go, oh, really, have you? And I'm more like you. I think I would struggle to think of something. I do struggle to think of those things because in a way they happen and then I go, okay, forget it.
Yeah.
Chuck it away.
Yeah, I just feel like I'd put like boiled eggs in there. Because I hate those and I would happily never, ever see a boiled egg again. But like, as far as like sort of, I can't think of an item. And I really tried to think and I was like, anything that I would put in there that I would never want to see again, you know, like, listen, my parents' divorce was a horrible time. But I don't have a particular item around that.
No, I mean, it can
divorce
be
papers.
It can be a thing. It's just something that represents it. So it can be a feeling. It can be an emotion, in fact.
Yeah.
Some people choose a habit that they have that they sort of think, oh, why do I do that every time?
Oh, a habit's a good one. Yeah.
So anyway, okay. I'll leave you to think about it.
Okay, all right.
As we go along. And maybe you'll discover it as we're talking.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Now, first of all, aren't you impressed that we've chatted for this long and I've not mentioned impressions at all?
Do you know what? As we went on to this, started doing this interview, I've sort of thought, oh, wow, I'm actually going to have to do some impressions. I sort of forgot about that.
No. You don't have to at
but
all.
I'm happy to.
No, I'm well aware, and I think everybody is, we're well aware of your extraordinary vocal ability.
Oh.
And I'm not expecting you to do them, because if anybody wants to see you do them, there's loads of examples on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about you.
Of course. Well, I appreciate that. But no, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that it's like, I find some people who do impressions can be like sort of embarrassed by it and sort of want to say, oh, yeah, it's like a thing I also do. Well, I'm really proud of it. Like, you know, mm-hmm. it takes a lot of time. And I think it is a certain skill that not everyone has.
Yeah.
And also there's a skill in doing impressions, but there's another skill in making it funny and making it relevant and making it work in a show.
Yeah.
So I'm really proud of it and love doing it.
And you should be. You're absolutely right. There are people who can do it and then don't have the ability to make it funny. They just do the voice. And you mm-hmm. go, you're just doing the voice and saying things they'd say.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And you always turn it into an interesting idea.
I think that's the thing. And I think a lot of people do love impressions, even if it is just, you know, Kermit saying, "Hi, Miss Piggy," and they can enjoy that and enjoy that that's someone who's done that with their voice.
Mm.
But I do think that's quite boring for me mm-hmm. as a creative person. So that's what I've really enjoyed doing with my shows, and like my latest show, Gritty Police Drama.
Yeah.
You know, like I've created this one man Gritty Police Drama. So it's the likes of Happy Valley and Line of Duty and and Luther. But it's a whole world of that. But within that, there's lots of celebrities. James Corden's been murdered. We got to find out who did it. You know, was it Jurgen Klopp and his gang? What, you know, I've got Sir David Attenborough in there as a drug smuggler. You know, and it's all been able to do all of that stuff.
We always knew that was true.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have one point where he says, "I'm a calzone, a Christmas cracker." And I just think, like, all of that stuff is so much fun to do than just saying, "Here we are in the world of David Attenborough." You know, it's
exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But also, unusually for people who can do impressions, you don't slip them into your conversation. I mean, you did just then because you were talking about the show and you were giving examples of it, but you don't do it. And I know a lot of people who impersonate people, and in fact, they probably discovered that skill because they're not happy with themselves, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yes. I think there's lots of points within that question, and a mm-hmm. good question, in that I don't. And I know I sometimes feel like I wish I could and should a bit more. It's certainly, and because people like it and because I get a bit embarrassed to do it,
mm-hmm.
it's different when I'm talking about a show or being interviewed about impressions. Then
yeah.
fine, you know you're there to do it. But it's in general conversation. And I know impressionists who are very good friends of mine, who I very much look up to, who do it all the time,
all
you know,
the time.
And you yeah. never hear their own voice.
No.
That isn't really me. But then I've seen some impressionists who do it, and that is what people love and people want. So sometimes I'm like, I should do it a bit more. And it's been weird at work because people are almost like surprised and then say, "Why am I surprised you can do a really good impression of that wig person or that,
yeah.
you know, that 20-year-old guy who's playing Marius, you know?" But then it's like, of course I can do that. But I just sort of save it into the right moment,
yeah.
you know?
Well, a good idea, I think. I spoke to Jan Ravens on this podcast. I've known Jan since I was a young man.
Aww.
We've known each other for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And my experience with her is that she ends up doing me.
Does she?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Your voice is incredible. I mean, that is...
She talks back to me and I think, oh, that's something recognizable. Oh, it's bloody hell, it's me.
That, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that with people with accents. Obviously, we've all got an accent, but, you know, there's people at work, you know, Gary, my dresser, is from Liverpool, so I will talk to him in his accent. The same, like, there's a girl, you know, the first cover Madame Tenardier is from Belfast, so I talk to her in her voice.
Mm.
And I just find myself doing that because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And as long as I'm not offending anybody, like, I think it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I think actually you're paying them a compliment. You're noticing
yeah.
them, and you're sort of saying, "Well, I don't want to. I want you to feel comfortable."
Yeah, it's the equivalent of being in France and speaking in their language. You see, I've made the effort to learn Northern Irish.
The most I do is talk in an accent.
Yes, exactly.
That is absolutely correct.
Yes, I know.
What are you talking about? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So there we are. We did talk about impressions.
That's all right. Yeah, good.
I thought I was going to
I love it.
I was going to deliberately avoid it, but no. But let's talk about the things you've chosen to put in a time capsule. See what that reveals about you.
Okay. So what the first thing is a football-related thing. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm an Arsenal season ticket holder, huge Arsenal fan, have been since I was about 8 years old. And I think the first thing I would put in there is I've got a Thierry Henry Arsenal shirt from 2004, which is the season Arsenal won the league unbeaten. Mm. They were called the Invincibles. It's 20 years since that.
Good Lord.
And I've got, and I know it's hideous. That's the last time we won the league. But I would put that in there because I just, there's something so perfect about that season. And Arsenal is so important to me. Mm. And, you know, I've got my little daughter supporting Arsenal now. I mean, she's two. She doesn't know what she thinks, but she can say, come on, Arsenal. And when I ask her who her favourite football team is, she can go, Arsenal. So, you know, but I think if I was to put one thing in there that symbolises that love in my life, it would be that Thierry Henry shirt, because I loved him as a player and a captain and everything about him, his swagger, his arrogance, his skill, and that season, that shirt. It's just, there's something so perfect about it. Mm. So it would evoke so much for me to open up that time capsule, or for someone to open it up one day and go, oh, this Luke Kempner, he loved this. And I feel like that is the most perfect thing I could put in.
And that's a statement you need to make to the world. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, proudly so, I think. What a great team. What an amazing football team they were. And I speak from the point of view of being a Manchester United fan, who at the time constantly wanted to beat them, and they were the only team who seemed to be able to beat us.
Well, as a fan around that time, who was constantly years and years of trying to beat Manchester United, you know, that's what was just so perfect about that season and those players. And I once saw Thierry Henry and Gilberto Silva in a private members club, and I was with my wife, and I was like, please, please, can I go over and say hello? And she was like, no, sit down. And I suppose, like, what would I have got out of it? Gone over and going, hello, I'm an Arsenal fan. Like, they've never met an Arsenal fan before.
Yeah.
But I have the memory of seeing them eating their lunch over there, which is very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Seeing someone in the flesh is very exciting when you're particularly sports people. I mean, we get used to seeing actors. Mm-hmm. Other people might be impressed by those actors. You just know them as other people who do the same job as you. And so it's not as impressive. But when you come across a sports person that you admire, it's thrilling, isn't it? It's the same thrill as you had when you were a tiny child.
It's anything to do with football. Like, I did Soccer AM quite a few times. And, you know, meeting anybody to it, meeting Jimmy Bullard, you know, like, or meeting anyone, it's like, you played. And he's like, mm-hmm. he's like, yeah, I'm mates with Theo Walcott. I'm like, oh my God, you know, Theo Walcott, oh my God. Yeah. You know, like, any of those things. But you're right. It's like, I was like, I went to watch the cricket with Rory Bremner and Dominic West, right? And I was sat just having a chat to Dominic West. And it's like, that's mad.
Yeah.
But you're right, it becomes sort of quite normal. Or even in musical theatre, you know, we've got Bradley Jayden, who's about to start in Les Mis for a couple of weeks, and people are so excited Bradley's coming in. And I'm like, oh, I went to drama school with him. Like, that's Bradley.
Yeah.
You know, but when it's football, there's just something sort of ethereal and special about it. And yeah, you're totally right. It wouldn't matter if it was Leonardo DiCaprio. I wouldn't be as excited as if it was...
Emmanuel Petit.
I've met Emmanuel Petit.
Nah, I mean,
it's totally that. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, it played for Arsenal for 3 years, but I would be way more excited to go for dinner with Emmanuel Petit than I would Leonardo DiCaprio.
I lived just around the corner from the old Arsenal Stadium for a while.
Oh, do you?
And
you did, right? Yeah.
If my upbringing as a Man United fan hadn't been so strong, I think I might have slipped.
Yes.
Because we used to go to Highbury a lot and watch
really?
Games.
Yeah.
So I saw great players there. Liam Brady.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Must be one of the best.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, I went to every Arsenal home game from the age of, well, from 98, I went to every Arsenal home game at Highbury. Mm. You know, probably missed two or three here and there. But, you know, and I used to go up with my friend's dad and him and his nan. And we'd drive up from Surrey. And so it's like Highbury is so special to me. Like every time I walk past it on the way to the Emirates, it is just, again, it just evokes so that childhood memory. And I think that's the thing is that stuff from our childhood goes, but when there's buildings like mm-hmm. Highbury, and I know it's flats now, but it's still there. It's mad that, you know, that's a place I went to so many weekends. And all the things I did in that time of a weekend, you've forgotten about, but that stadium is still there and those memories are still there. Mm. And that shirt is still there, hence why it's going in the time capsule.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Well, Thierry Henry, I think, could be argued as the greatest footballer that there's been in the Premiership. I think.
Yeah, it annoys me today when the youth of today say they're like Cherry on Wheat wasn't even that good. I'm like, you just don't know what you're talking about. And there was this great clip of Jack Grealish saying to Thierry Henry, and he was just like, he's like, well, Thierry, do you think you could have got past Kyle Walker? And Thierry Henry looks at him, and he went, in my prime. And he's like, yeah, and yeah. And he's like, are you mad? And he's like, literally couldn't stop laughing. And it's like, Jack Grealish, you have no idea how good Thierry Henry was.
He's almost saying, I could do it now.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I just love the look at his face of like, lads, like he could have taken on anyone in the world.
Fantastic. I mean, yeah. I've always been an admirer of Arsenal, which is annoying
when
they're a rival. But I've always loved them. I was, and we are talking the day after, sadly for you, Arsenal went out of the FA Cup, ridiculously beaten by Liverpool. And I found myself sitting there absolutely rooting for Arsenal.
Yeah.
I lose my membership of the Man United fan club.
I know. Well, I don't know. I suppose you're supposed to hate Liverpool kind of more than Arsenal, really.
I suppose so, yeah. I don't really hate anyone, you know.
No, really, that is the best
way
to
when they're a good team, when they play well, you know.
I'm the same. Mm. I'm the same. I sort of hate. I go through stages of hating Tottenham Hotspur, you know. And you, as annoying as it was, they were above us. I was like, yeah, but that football's amazing, and there's something exciting about that. And also, there's anything exciting overcoming these teams that are just doing it because they've got more money than the other teams. So you can always root for a Tottenham or an Arsenal or even a Liverpool to a degree. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's all very special to me. And yes, it is a sad day after losing three games in a row. But that's the thing. You come back every season. You keep coming back. They're always going to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Things go on.
Yes.
You know, some you win, some you lose.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, we will definitely put that fantastic shirt, the great Thierry Henry, into the time capsule for you.
Thank you.
I would love to meet Thierry Henry. I'd love to see him because I once saw Usain Bolt.
Wow.
But he walked past me. It's like watching, you know, it's like watching a cartoon. It's like watching
a god.
But also they cover so much ground.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I bet you Thierry Henry is the same.
I never forget being sat front row at Highbury and seeing Thierry Henry at full pace, kick a ball down the line, chase after it, beat two other players on the way there. And it's like watching an animal. Like, you can't believe someone could be that quick.
Yeah.
Although I tell you, there is an opposite of when you go and see Scottish football. Because I'm also a Hearts fan, and when you go and see Hearts play, and if they're not playing Rangers or Celtic, you sort of go, oh, I feel like I could get a game here. Which definitely wouldn't be the case if I actually played, but you're watching it going, I feel like I wouldn't be too out of place here.
They're having a go.
Well done. Yeah.
Oh, Lord. All right, so let's put that shirt in there, Henry. Bless him. Yeah. Okay, that's in. That's the first thing. Well done.
Okay.
Right, what's number two? Okie dokie. Ad break time as per usual. Unless you get this pod ad-free through Acast Plus, we'll be back after these messages.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the messages. If you got the one saying, "I'm being held hostage, please call the police immediately," just ignore it. It's a minor technical fault. Right, back to the lovely Luke Kempner and the rest of his time capsule items.
So my second thing is a Les Mis program from 2009. Mm-hmm. So this is when I first did the show in 2009. And it was...
What part did you play?
I was in the ensemble,
right,
and I understudied Gareth Gates, who was playing Marius. The great thing about Les Mis is the ensemble track, you do have lots to do. Mm. So I was the pimp and I was in Thénardier's gang and I understudied a few other roles as well.
So in fact, if you're not on, you're changing.
Yeah. Oh, completely that. Yeah. It's so exhausting for the ensemble in that show. It's more exhausting to be in the ensemble than it is to play one of the principals.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got that job, I was I left drama school in 2008, and I did a show at a drama school called New Boy, which was a play which I did in London, and I did really, really well. And then after that, I sort of went through a series of, a panto, but just kept getting really close to the big show, Jersey Boys and Wicked and Oliver and all these things. But I got really close to it and then didn't get them. And would always have these final rounds and be waiting for the phone call and it never coming. And I was working in a hairdresser's, cleaning up hair and signing people in. And I remember my mum actually, who doesn't have much money, but she said to me, look, I got offered this play in Hampstead, which is a profit share, Noel Coward play, to play the lead part. And anyway, my mum sort of said, look, I'll give you 200 quid a week so you can do it.
Right.
Because otherwise I couldn't do it otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
They were going to pay us 30 quid a week. Mm-hmm. My mum said, look, I'll give you 200 quid a week. So that could just about fund living in London and going to do this play. And whilst I was doing that play, I was auditioning for Les Mis at the 25th anniversary tour. And I got it, having left drama school, and thought, maybe this just isn't going to happen for me. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely magical. And my mum cried as soon as I got it. And I do think I helped being in a play because you're exercising your skills.
Yeah.
So sort of getting that was so huge. And then the production, it was a reimagining of the show, which is actually now the production that's in London.
Mm.
But it was this reimagining of the show. We then, which finished off us doing it at the O2. Like everything about that tour was like, I've arrived. And so that's why that would be in my time capsule. And, even the fact that I've now gone back to the show, it just shows, they call it the boomerang show because you're always coming back to it. But I feel like if there was one thing that could symbolise Les Mis and what that means to me, I feel like that programme for 2009 could do that.
Mm. There's a very difficult situation, isn't it? When you have to say to people, I'm an actor, and they say, what have you done? You say, not much yet.
Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
And actually, then getting into those jobs and having done something like that, you can absolutely start feeling like an actor, which makes all the difference when you go in for jobs.
Completely, completely. And I mean, especially with a show like Les Mis, because everyone knows it.
Mm.
That's what my wife has enjoyed, particularly at the moment. It's just that you just say to me, oh, yeah, he's one of the lead roles in Les Mis. And people are like, oh, my God, even if they hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, I could tell I was in South Pacific and people are like, which is mad, but some people would go, what? What's that? I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But with Les Mis, it's just everyone knows what it is. And it is that thing of like, it doesn't matter what telly I've done, you be in Les Mis and that's just enough for everyone,
Yeah.
And it's my mum's favourite show. And it just earning money, at the time, I think I was on about £7.50 a week. But it was just, that was like £1 billion to me, going from my mum having to lend me 200 quid a week and her being able to do that, just from her, she has enough money to get by, and for her to go, no, I'm going to do this. And then to get that, to be able to go and do a show like that and have that kind of money. And I always remember being in Cardiff and buying an All Saints leather jacket and be like, I can buy this. I can actually buy it. So all of those things, it's so much about that show is just magical to me.
What a wonderful commitment from her, though, to show that confidence in you.
Yeah, definitely.
Sort of say, well, I will back you until this happens.
Yeah.
Which assumes absolutely that it will.
I think she just sort of saw and was just, I was having to just say no to do acting.
Mm.
And I suppose at the time, I was only like 21. So I was just like, well, that's the deal. You know, you're not getting a job. So, and you can't afford to do that. So you got to work if you want to stay in London. I was still, you know, I was still living in London with my mates and life wasn't awful, but
no,
but I wasn't getting the acting jobs.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, it was a lot of confidence from my mum and just wanting me to do it, which I, and now I've got my own daughter, I know I would do exactly the same. But I've always been sort of brought up and in my own head just been like, well, it's your responsibility. So I've never asked for money from my parents because it's my responsibility to find it. So, you know, she offered it out of nowhere.
Mm.
So, yeah, so much about that. And that was just the start of my musical theatre journey, which was 4 years before going off into comedy and then now coming back to it. Mm. But that's why it's that programme from 2009, because it just symbolises everything again.
Yeah, fantastic. I was in the theatre next to where you are at the moment.
Ah.
So I was in the Gielgud.
The Gielgud, right, yeah. That's
doing,
it, yeah.
Doing Yes, Prime Minister in the Gielgud for
oh,
ages.
Wow.
And on one of those days, I can't remember what it was for, but it was all the theatres. Everybody did something between the matinee and the...
Oh, okay.
And people were out in the streets trying to raise awareness for something. And I can't remember what... So it didn't work because I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But we had a tug-of-war match.
Really?
Yeah, in the street, in the middle of Shaftesbury Avenue.
Wow.
There was a tug-of-war match between the cast of Yes, Prime Minister and some of the cast of Les Mis.
Yeah.
And then we were sort of holding them. And then the rest of the cast joined in.
But there's these great stories of like Judi Dench being in a show next door to Les Mis when it was the Palace.
Yeah.
And her going on in the barricade.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ian McKellen has gone on. When they did it on tour, Ian McKellen went on as a student in the barricade. And they just gave him a costume. There's pictures of him. That's from like 4 or 5 years ago.
Fantastic.
Well, I think we still do those sorts of things, you know, and even we've had Secret Santa recently and Old Friends is on next door. So Lea Salonga came and was Santa for us. You know, I mean, like just, I love stuff like that. Just, yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it, that it is a community, the West End.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Okay, lovely. Well, let's put that program in.
Okay.
2009 seems a long time ago.
Oh, I know. So the third thing I've got is a wooden frog, right?
Right.
It's a wooden frog that's got a stick with it and you stroke it and it makes the noise of a frog.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And I got it in Thailand on my honeymoon with my wife, Alana, and we've always called each other froggy because of randomly, like she was sort of like a surrogate grandmother to me, but she was my mum's friend, Rosemary. And Rosemary thought that I liked frogs.
Right.
I never said I liked frogs, but she'd made it up in her head that I liked frogs. And I'd never had the heart to tell her that I don't like frogs. So every birthday and Christmas, I've got something to do with frogs. And I'm gonna try and show you with this. If I can show you. Can you see up there, that shelf up there?
Yeah.
You can see the wooden frog.
Oh, yeah.
And in amongst it, you can see in the little bush up there, there's frog stuff. There's, if I could get you closer, there's loads and loads of frog memorabilia that I was given by Rosemary over the years.
So every year it would be, here's another thing for your collection. I know how much you love them.
Yeah. And I'd always go, oh, yeah, like, yeah, oh, God, there's a good one this time. And Anna always found that very funny when we first met because Rosemary was still with us at that time. And I think she gave me like a game with a load of frogs on it. And I was like, that is mad that you've never said. And you just keep accepting this frog stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, sort of done that since I was like 10. And just gone, yeah, I love frogs.
Eventually it would become impossible, though.
Yeah, I know. When she gets you a real one. But the reason, so like that story I find fun, but also it symbolizes my wife. And like for me, my family is so important to me and my Alana's happiness and how happy she has made me and us, our daughter, Ari. You know, like for me, there is nothing more important. And I know that's cliche, but it just isn't, you know, like, mm-hmm. Alana and I have been together for 12 years. And it symbolizes us getting married when that was our honeymoon. And so I suppose I'd have to have a little note with it to explain.
Mm. Yeah, but, you know, the sound, once you hear that sound, that's it, you're back.
And I can remember us buying that because we both got food poisoning within about a day of being in Asia.
Of course, yes.
So, like, it symbolizes that and us both lying on our hotel floor in our luxury hotel. Just like, oh, I'm dying. And also, like, we met and it was like love at first sight. Like, you know, it was so mad. You know, we've been together since like 23, 24. We've always been the couple that our friends have always sort of say that they look up to and see as a sort of benchmark. And I feel like we just, look, we have our struggles. We have a two-year-old that has its that has its struggles as well. But I love everything about my, you know, my perfect night would be sitting in with my wife, playing a game, drinking a glass of red, having cooked a roast dinner. Like, that is perfection for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're a lucky man. You're a lucky man to have discovered that. And yeah. I know you say sort of almost with embarrassment, and I know it's cliched, but, you know, it's the most important thing in my life. But not everybody discovers that. Mm-hmm. Not everybody realizes that. Some people, the most important thing in their life is money.
Yep.
You know, some people it's fame or it's sex. Mm-hmm. You know, and their life is driven by that. But I think you're really fortunate to have fallen into the group who says the most important thing to me is my family.
It is. And I make decisions around that. Mm-hmm. My sole purpose in life is to, you know, I'm not this sort of masculine protector, provider, but my purpose in life is to do right by my wife and daughter. Mm. And I will make decisions based on that.
Which can be difficult in a professional situation. If somebody said to you, there's this job and it's America and you're away for 9 months, which may happen. Those things could happen in the future.
Completely.
You have to make decisions about those sort of things.
I'll be like, book my flight.
Yeah, quite. Bye. Bye.
Yeah. Exactly. But you just weigh up all of those things, you know, and even being in a show every night, you know, my wife has to be on her own every night. I don't get to put my daughter to bed apart from Sundays. Mm-hmm. And when she's at school, if I was still in a show in London or gigging or touring, you only see them in the morning before they go to school.
Yeah.
You know, and it is really, really tough.
Yeah, yeah. But you are getting up, though. That's the difference. The difference is that some people in that situation would say, well, I can't. I've got a show tonight. I've got to stay in bed. I've got to sleep late. And they wouldn't see them at all.
No, you've got to. You've got to. I mean, I'm lucky in that at the moment, you know, I can see Ari most of the day. Mm-hmm. Today she's at nursery, but, you know, I'll always get up. If I can get the odd lie in, that sort of helps. But to be honest with you, I'm not somebody who lies in anyway. Like, even when Alana says, oh, you stay in bed. Like, as soon as Ari wakes up, I'm awake. It's just quite nice to lie in bed and scroll my phone for an hour instead of having to get into dad mode. But most days I will just get up and you crack on, you know.
Yeah, yeah, good decision. I mean, I said to you earlier about the fact that now you're in a situation where you finish the show and you get home.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rather than going to Joe Allen's and then to the Groucho Club. And
I know. Mm. That's almost, that side of it is almost alien to me.
Yeah.
You know, and you even see it sometimes, you know, New Year's Eve, it was like, oh, we're all going to have a drink on stage afterwards. I'm like, I'm not, I'm going home to see my wife. You know, like, yes, Ari will be in bed by that point because we had a matinee like you'll do on your Sundays. Mm. But I was just like, I'm getting home. I see you guys all the time.
Yeah.
Even with Arsenal, you know, it's like, I had a ticket for yesterday, but I sold my ticket because Alana would say yes. If I said, I really want to go, she would go, cool, you go. But deep down, we know that those Sundays are so important.
Yeah.
And just going, I'm going to go and what, you know, I'm going to spend an hour in traveling into the football, 3 hours at the game, hour back. Like, you can't, not when you're working every day.
No. I'm always amazed by the people who do. I think they've got very long-suffering wives.
Mm-hmm.
Or wives who'd rather they were out of the house.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's their break. I know, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll put the little frog in there.
Yes.
With its stick so that anybody can make it croak.
Yeah.
An explanation of this reminds me of my wife.
Yes, absolutely. Lovely.
Okay.
So we've got fourth and then the...
And then you have to decide what you're going to put in that you want to get rid of.
Right, yeah, we'll get there. My fourth thing is a badge that says Biggins 3 on it, right?
Right.
Now, this is from a TV show I did called The Imitation Game when I had to pretend to be Christopher Biggins. It was basically...
You look just like him, which is
Thank you, exactly, yeah. But it was a show that Jam Ravens was on, as well as which we also did at the Royal Variety with Jan and Rory Bremner and Deborah Stevens and Alexander Armstrong. It was a big TV show for me, big Saturday night ITV show that I did a couple of episodes of. And one of the rounds was... It was a bit like Blind Date, and it was me, Rory Bremner, and the real Christopher Biggins. We were behind a screen, and we all had to answer our questions as Christopher Biggins. And then Deborah Stevenson had to guess who was the real Christopher Biggins. And Mike, she guessed it was me.
Brilliant.
She thought I was the real Christopher Biggins. And then the screen pulled down and revealed that it was me and not actually Christopher Biggins. And it's the reason I pick it is because, and I'm going to flip into the voice now to demonstrate, otherwise it'd be quite strange to not actually do it after talking about it. But it was, it's one of the first impressions I ever did. And I remember doing it a lot when I was in musical theatre because it was someone that everyone knew and so different to my voice and my look. You see, and I love, you know, and I sort of love all that kind of campness of theatre. And that's, I'll be honest with you, Mike, I think it's who I truly want to be, is a bit more like Biggins. And especially his laugh, you know, he's got that wonderful, So, and I've worked with Christopher Biggins a couple of times as well, and he's a wonderful man and symbolises everything about theatre lovies that I enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm from a sort of laddie football background, but once I'm in the world of theatre, I'm like, hello, heart, hello, darling, how are you? You know, and it's, you know, and it is, it's the Biggins inside me. Well, careful how I say that. But for me, it symbolises my impressions work, my telly work, a show I did that went really well. One of the first impressions I did. For me, it just symbolises a lot, again, like the other things I've picked. Mm. So that's why I would put that little badge that says Biggins 3.
Biggins 3. What a joy he is. He's fantastic, isn't he? I took over from him in pantomime, which was very daunting.
Whoa.
He'd played Dame at the Cambridge Arts for about 6 years, and then he couldn't do it because he was in a show in the West End. And so somebody said, do you want to do Dame? And I went, okay. They said, oh, they love Biggins here. They really, I'll tell you what he does every year. And I said, I'm not doing anything he does.
Mm.
Otherwise, it'll just be a copy. It's no good.
Yeah.
And do you know what? He had a day off. And he came to see me in it.
Did he?
And he came and, darling, you were absolutely I'm aching from laughter.
Oh, bless him.
I
That's
know.
Lovely.
And
yes.
I wasn't that good. So he was just being fantastically generous. And then another time I went to see a friend in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and he was playing the Baron in it.
Was he? Yeah.
Yeah. And I went backstage to see Louise Gold.
Oh, right. Yeah,
was there.
Yeah.
And I walked past his dressing room. At that moment, he opened the door and he went, hello, darling. Hello. Are you all right, Chris? And he said, yeah. And he was standing in. He had sock suspenders on.
Yeah.
And no trousers. He said, come in, come in. And so I, well, I haven't come to see you, but I will. I went in.
Yeah.
We chatted for a bit. And then he said, you didn't come to see me, did you?
Said, oh, no.
He went, oh, well, go, leave. Oh, no, first of all, sign the book. Everybody has to sign the book.
And
he had a book there that everybody who visited him signed.
Oh, wow.
Which is a great idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a similar thing recently when Catherine Bohart, have you had Catherine on your podcast? Wonderful
no.
Irish comedian.
No, she's great, yeah.
She came along to see Les Mis with a couple of friends who I also knew who were in a sketch group called Brittany. Mm. And they messaged me at the interval going, we're in and we're loving it. And I was like, oh my God, thank you so much. And then I was like, come to stage door, I'll say hello afterwards. Came out, saw them. And I was like, thank you so much for coming. I was like, oh, I can't believe they just booked tickets to come come and see me. Amazing. Yeah, they hadn't come to see me. They'd come to see the girl who was playing Eponine, who they knew as well. I just couldn't believe that the worlds would collide, not with me.
That there could be possibly anybody
else
that they would want to see.
I know, but it turns out it was. So that was, they didn't know that, but I was a bit embarrassed as I was walking out going, oh God, I thought they'd literally gone, yeah, we'll come. We won't even ask him for cast rate tickets. We'll just book and see it. They got cast rate tickets from someone else.
Yes.
But yes, no. So Christopher Biggins, he'd go, well, his badge would go in there.
Yeah, perfect. Bless him. Bless Christopher Biggins. Yeah. That's what I say. So we now have to see if you can find something that you're going to put in that you want to get rid of.
Yes.
And it could just be a feeling, or it can be as simple as boiled eggs.
I think if I was going to go silly, it would be boiled eggs. If I was to go a little bit deeper and one of the worst moments of my life, which has a happy ending, is that when my daughter was born, she was a flat baby, meaning that she was flatline.
Mm.
And we had 10 minutes of not knowing if she'd make it. And my wife was in shock. So I didn't know if my wife was going to make it either. I sort of had the worst 10 minutes of my life was in that room.
Mm.
And my daughter, you know, all the build up, and we'd had my wife was 17 days overdue.
Right.
and had been induced and all this sort of thing. And they're obviously so understaffed at the NHS. And you know, it was just a completely traumatic experience being in the hospital. And eventually, after 9 hours of labour, the baby was born. And then for it to come out, for Harry to come out and be completely white and me, and I'll never forget that image of crying from seeing my wife give birth was amazing. Mm-hmm. But then seeing the baby coming out, I'm due to cut the umbilical cord and them saying, them pulling a different cord, an alarm cord, where five people rushed in, rushed the baby off, and they're going, flat baby, flat baby, flat baby. And they take the baby over to this tiny, tiny, tiny little sort of incubator operating table to get her heart going and get colour into her, because she was just completely white and just flopped. And eventually, after... and I know even after this podcast, I'll have to go and watch the video of that I filmed of when she'd started crying and I could cuddle her, because it was, that was magical. But it took 7 minutes for us to hear anything. And then, wow. And then after 10 minutes, she was there and crying and a little red baby. But it was, I just, things flashed through my head at the time of just like, is this going to be my life? Am I going to lose one of them or both? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mentioned earlier about the wooden frog and how important they are to me, obviously. But, you know, like for me to go through 10 minutes of going, who knows what the future holds right now. And also just not, my wife going to me, is she okay? Mm. And having to just say something, you know, and something in my brain just say yes. She's going to be fine, to give my wife some strength to focus on herself and her health.
Yeah.
But the happy ending, obviously, is after 10 minutes, it was all, to a degree, fine. Mm. And Harry is now just the most beautiful, wonderful, absolutely, touch wood. You know, we've never been to hospital with her in 2 years, and she's never, you know, we've had a few bumped heads and things like that, but she's just been nothing but perfect. And she's such a wonderful, wonderful little girl. And my wife was fine. And, you know, so it was a happy ending in the end, but I would love to forget
that. Yeah. But it is extraordinary, isn't it, that you can go through life just assuming everything's going to be okay. And we mostly do in life. We assume everything's fine. And then when those moments happen, you become aware of just how important things are to you. And you've demonstrated that through the whole of this conversation, the fact that, you know, there are other things that you do that other people might sort of go, well, surely you should be prioritizing that. Mm-hmm. And you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're really sorted.
But I think, and you're right in that those, you know, because I remember when my wife's father died of a heart attack out of nowhere, really suddenly, about 10 years ago. And it's those moments where, you know, I got a call saying, Dad's not very well. Mum's just been screaming on the phone. We don't know what's happening. And you just go, he'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was told by my wife's uncle, you should come, because I was touring, because they're from Scotland. I was in Dundee and he was like, you should come to Edinburgh. And I just got on the train, go straight to Edinburgh and cancelled the show that night. And just, you just think, it'll be fine. Like, you know.
Yeah.
These things don't happen. But they can do.
Yeah.
And it's at those moments where all the work stuff that you think is so important, all the money stuff, and you can't just say, oh, like, well, don't worry about money. Like, you've obviously got to worry about money. You've got to pay the bills. You've got to do that. But when that stuff happens, that important stuff, that's what's important. Mm. And none of the other stuff matters when you go through those moments. And then those are the moments where your true, what truly is important in life is what you can realize at those moments. So maybe it's not good to put something in a time capsule to never forget it, because it can remind you of how important it is.
Well, it's there. You can open it if you like. But hopefully the horror of it will disappear, and actually just what you remember is the absolute joy of knowing they're both safe.
Yeah, completely, completely.
Yeah, fantastic. It's been absolutely lovely to talk to you. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you so much. I'm glad we found the time.
Yeah, well, I look forward to maybe meeting up in town.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to come and see Wicked again. I'll come and see it.
Yeah, do. Let me know, and then maybe there'll be someone else in the cast that you'll know and you can get cheap rates.
Yeah, exactly that, exactly that.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Luke Kempner. Thank you for listening. If you found it a tonic for the ears, then why not add a bit of gin and have a party? Or you could subscribe to this podcast to get all new episodes as they're released. And maybe you'd like to rate us by clicking on 5 stars, or even possibly writing a short, pleasant comment or review. Thank you very much. This was a cast-off production for Acast, where you can sign up for Acast Plus and get this podcast without adverts and with a bonus podcast every week. Details in the description of this episode. Do search us out on social media to see what we're up to, or just check your local police reports, obviously. And if you're an appreciator of fine music, then perhaps you'd like to download or stream the My Time Capsule theme tune, written and performed by Pass the Peas Music, which you can find on Spotify. Our producer was John Fenton Stevens. So many thanks to him for making me sound reasonably Right, if you're looking to give your existence more meaning, remember this. Some people make things happen. Some people just watch things happen. And then there are those, like me, who spend the whole time wondering, what the bloody hell just happened? Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.